been a lot of people here have been sober a lot longer than I have. And it kind of reminds me of one of my guys, my newest guy, called me late last week. And he told me, Fred, you know, I've been thinking, and it just seems to me that there are people who are more worthy to get sober than me. I said, well, of course there are, Chuck, but it's not your decision. So that's the kind of the way that I feel here tonight, is that it wasn't my decision to be here, but I'm here, we're stuck, and I'm going to make the best of it, and I hope you will. I will tell you one thing. Somebody can cook some chili. That was terrific. Thank you so much for that. I need to tell you that my story is always directed toward the new man. Whether you're new in or you're newly back in or you're thinking about coming in, this story is directed toward you. Everybody else will just have to put up with it because the new person is the lifeblood of AA. And I remember what it was like to be new, and it was no damn fun. So with that, I want to invite everybody here that's not so new. I want to invite you to be new again. And I want to give you two words to take home with tonight. And that's forever new. Forever new. Let's be forever new. Because when I was new at this thing, I put everything into it. I mean, can't you remember? I mean, can't you remember those early days when it was you just wake up and the first thing you did was read the daily reflection or the 24-hour a day or whatever you did, and then you just, you know, you get down on your knees and you say your prayer, and then boy, all day long everything's just, you know, like you're one step away from a heart attack, and it's just, oh my God, it's another red light. You know, what am I going to do? Oh, I need to call my sponsor, God Almighty. You know, I'm hung at a red light. So I remember what that was like, but I gave it everything I had, because the thing is this thing is so much larger than we think it is. It takes so much more to get sober than we believe. Those of us who have tried it other ways can attest to that. As a result of that, I just remember that when I gave it everything, it gave me everything. It gave me everything back. And I gave it everything this time around, which I'll go back and tell you that my sponsor's name is Lloyd S. My home group is the St. John's Group in Columbia. My sobriety date is March the 30th of 2000. So this year I hit 10, which is a big deal, double digits. That's no record for this. That is no record for this crowd, but it is a record for me. So I'm delighted to be able to sit up here and come to you and tell you my story, and hopefully we'll hear something that together here that's important. I want to try to get to the solution as much as I can tonight, but identification is part of our solution. So I do want to hit on enough of my story that you're comfortable that I'm not in the wrong place. I started drinking when I was 12 years old. The first time I ever drank, I got drunk and I got sick. I got over getting sick very, very quickly. It took me 35 years to get over getting drunk. I just loved it so much. I had to go back to that well, but I only went back as often as I could. and I only drank all I could get. And that's the way it was for me when I was as a teenager. I couldn't drink all the time because they made me do things like go to school, but so I would run away. And when I was running away, I was drinking. So I tried to make it a full-time occupation as early as I could, but things kept getting in my way. Life kept getting in my way. But not so much that by the time I was about 19, a friend of mine was talking to a guy, and I was 19 or 20, not very old at all, and my best friend was there, and it was a guy that was bragging about how much he could drink. And you know how we do that, you know, we lie about how much we can drink when we're young, and then when we get old, we lie about how little we drink. This guy was still at the line about how much he could drink stage, and my best friend looked at him and said, "Fred spills more than you can drink." And it was the first time I ever heard that I drank a lot. I didn't know. And instead of going to check myself into treatment or anything, I went, "Wow, that's really cool. He's saying I'm somebody. He's saying I'm a big shot. Wow, I'm a grown-up. This is terrific." And I jumped on that horse, and I rode it for a long time. I got married when I was 18. I found myself a fool and abducted her. And she became my hostage for the next 7 years till she finally came to her senses. And I lost her to alcoholism, but I didn't know that. See, I just thought I lost her somewhere along the way. I really didn't understand it was alcoholism that had done it. Now, I stand in front of you as a man who has probably had 200 or 300 jobs. 100 with an H. 100 jobs. Many hundreds of jobs. And see, and I never understood that was my alcoholism with that either. I really didn't. I mean, I just thought everybody had a lot of jobs, didn't you? I mean, you're not supposed to stay anywhere longer than 6 months. I mean, 6 months, they already find out you're drinking in the morning. I mean, you need to get out of there. And I was not the guy that always got fired. I was the guy who always knew he was going to get fired and quit first. You can't do nothing to me. You don't know who I am. I quit. You know? Great. I'll tell you, there's a guy here tonight. I quit one time on a job in North Carolina. I got in a fight with my boss, and I got in a huff, and I quit. And I walked out, and I found out my ass was in rural North Carolina. I just didn't have a car. I had just given him back the cell phone that the company had supplied. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have nothing. But that's the way of my life is you just bother me just a little bit, and I'll quit on you, or I'll steal from you, or I'll hurt you, or I'll do whatever I can, and then I'll disappear. That's what I know how to do. What I know how to do is screw up, disappear, and drink. That's what I'm really good at. I'm still learning all this other stuff, but I'm really good at those things. I'm good enough that y'all have heard geographic cures. You've heard enough about geographic cures. I'm good enough that I want you to know that I took 19 geographic cures, leaving Columbia, South Carolina, going to find some place where I would not be alcoholic. Well, I've tried Canada, I've tried Mexico, I've tried Central America, I've tried the British West Indies, I've tried Florida, Oregon, West Virginia, Arizona, New Mexico, California. I have tried just about everywhere. And do you know what? This damn body of mine is alcoholic everywhere I take it. It's unbelievable. It doesn't make any difference where I take it. It doesn't make any difference what I tell it. I can tell it, you know, you need to not be so alcoholic. You need to drink a little bit less. I can't do it, folks. I just can't do it. I have got to drink until I can't drink anymore. That's the way that I drink. It's just, it is insane drinking. I went through a second wife. I found a second dummy. I abducted her. She was my hostage for the next 11 years. I lost her. It was due to alcoholism. I didn't know that. I didn't know it was due to alcoholism. I just thought I lost her somewhere along the way. I lost businesses. It was amazing. I got a business to lose. God gave me a business, and I gave it back. No thanks. This is too good for me, but I appreciate the offer. If I ever sober up, I'll get in touch. I used to talk about the fact that the things in my life were on a conveyor belt. They would come in, I would enjoy them, and I would wave goodbye. It's just the way that everything went. I couldn't hang on to anything except for trouble. I was very good at hanging on to trouble. That's enough about the problem. I'm in the right place. Now I want to talk to you primarily about the other side of things, about what we're really here for, because we're not here to find out how to drink or how I drank. We're here to find out how I didn't drink and how I came to be joyful not drinking. Let me tell you something. Sometimes we come into AA and we can't see our own progress. And we don't realize that we're getting as well as we are. We can see it in others, but we can't see it in ourselves. Well, that's your condition. My condition, I can see it in me. Let me tell you why. When I was living, this is toward the end of my drinking, when I was the primary resident of a city park in Portland, Oregon, living in the dirt and the bushes, nobody ever said, "Hey, I got an idea. Let's get a microphone, go ask that guy how he did it." Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Nobody wanted to know how I did it. They just didn't want to catch it. So, and that's the kind of drinking I did. I went to hospitals. I went to jails. I went to treatment centers. I did all that. And I could not quit drinking. I couldn't quit drinking on my own. And I couldn't quit drinking with AA because you people refused to get me sober against my will. Do you know what I mean? I kept coming to meetings from time to time. I would check in to see if the sobriety fairy was visiting that one so that she could conk my ass on the head and say, "Well, you sober now? Because I know you don't want to quit, but we're going to make you quit." And I just couldn't quit until I got to the wanting to quit part. And I got to the wanting to quit part every now and then for 20 years. I came to AA for the first time when I was in my late 20s. And I got sober, if I'm sober now, in my late 40s. So it took me 20 years. I'd like to tell people I had a 20-year slip. That slip is a tough fall, let me tell you. When I finally came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I changed my terms. Because I used to come to Alcoholics Anonymous with I wanted to trade with you. I wanted to negotiate with God. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll get sober, and you give me, I want a nice place, and I need a pretty girl. I need some money and a nice car, and maybe a good job or either a whole bunch of money. And then I'll get sober for you. Because, see, that's what I really thought I would be doing the world, and I would be doing the world a favor by getting sober. But I didn't understand that God would be doing me the favor if he let me get sober. When I came to AA this time, the only thing I can tell you is that I dropped all those demands. The other thing that I dropped when I came this time is that for years I had been wandering around. I bet some of you people have done this too. I had been wandering around with a question in my mind for years. This is the whole time I went through two wives, businesses. This is the whole time with DUIs, car wrecks, lost, you know, going to jail, all this kind of stuff. And the big question in my mind was, am I really alcoholic? You know what I'm saying? I might not be alcoholic, you know? And I mean, now let me tell you something. I don't know about your mother, but my mother would roll over in her grave if she thought that I had spent long days just praying to God that I just might be a problem drinker. Because a problem drinker doesn't have to quit drinking. They can do what they want. They can get in trouble, then they quit drinking. They get under some pressure, they quit drinking. They cut down the drinking. They slow down their drinking. I'm alcoholic. I don't have that option. You put me in any situation, I'm going to drink. If it's a good situation, I'm going to drink. If it's a bad situation, I'm going to drink. And I'm not going to drink. It's going to be kind of like this. Tonight, I'll know that y'all want me to go home when they unplug this thing. And that'd be the same thing, is that when you unplug the liquor, I knew it was time for me to go home. But until then, I was right there in it. But I dropped any conditions, because by the time I got here, I don't know where you are, but by the time I got here, I didn't care what you had. It says, if you really want what we have, I wasn't even asking you anymore what you had. I knew what you had to be better than what I had, because all I had was misery. Because I got out of the park, and I made a little bit of a comeback, and then I was going right back down the tubes, and I saw the park opening its mouth, going to take me back in, and I could not stand that. So the park was not the end of my drinking, but it was my bottom. I dropped all my conditions, all my unlesses. I'll quit drinking unless something happens. I'll quit drinking unless people don't do what I want them to do, and then I'm going to drink. Or I'm going to quit drinking until things don't go my way, and then I'm going to drink. And, you know, just setting yourself up. Because all you're saying, anytime you got any kind of condition on your sobriety, all you're saying is, I'm biding my time till I get drunk. Because what I was looking for when I came to AA the first time, I was looking for a way to have a problem-free life. We don't do that. By the time I got here for the last time, I was ready to take a life where I did not have to drink when I had problems. I had a way to be happy when I was sober. And you have given me that in spades. The day that I quit drinking, though, I didn't even know I was quitting drinking. I don't know about you. I didn't know I was quitting drinking. If you had told me you're quitting drinking, I probably would have had to drink over it because it would have scared me so badly. But it was so weird. I remember because I didn't know I was quitting drinking. I had quit drinking that morning. My sponsor was mad at me. My girlfriend was mad at me. My girlfriend was sort of the key to my roof, so I didn't really want her that mad. My sponsor had talked to my girlfriend and told her, you may as well go on ahead and leave because it's just going to get worse from here. Because he could see I was not serious about getting sober. I was just serious about playing around. Because, you know, it was winter time and I didn't want to go out on the road, be a hobo again in the damn winter. So on the day that I quit drinking, I did not know I had quit drinking when I quit drinking that morning. And on that afternoon when my girlfriend went to an appointment, I went over and I walked over to, and I cut through the woods. She had my car when I still had a car. And I cut through the woods and I went and I stood outside of a convenience store. I was going over there. I only had a couple of dollars in my pocket, but a couple of dollars will buy you a couple of big beers. You can get some of that fortified beer. A couple of dollars will take the edge off. I mean, a couple of dollars will give me enough energy to find a few more dollars somewhere, even if they're yours, but I'll find them. So that was my idea, was to go and knock the edge off. And I went over there and I started to go in the store and I got about from here to the back of the tent. I didn't get that close. And I got right about there and something just stopped me. Nothing like this ever happened in my life. Something just stopped me. And this is what I want to talk about. What is this something? It's this higher power thing. You know, I wish I had better news for some of you agnostics, but you best get it off. I mean, we only got two things here. We got lousy coffee and a great God. So we hope you like the coffee if you don't care for the God. But something stopped me before I went in that store and just stopped me cold. And I knew as sure as anything, absolutely sure, if I go in that store, I'm going to die. If I go in that store, I'm going to die. It was just that clear. And then miracle of miracles, I turned and I walked, and I didn't even cut through the woods. I walked along the edge of Sumter Highway back to my apartment complex, stunned. And it dawned on me, my God, are you quitting drinking? You know, my sponsor had already sat me down, and he sat me down in yesterday's restaurant. And he looked at me and he said, you know, Fred, going to any lengths includes not drinking. And God almighty, he could have told me anything. I was like, you mean you're really quitting? I mean, I couldn't understand that he was not talking about until his wife got off his ass and the boss got off his ass. And I mean, he really meant he was going to quit drinking. And I wondered that morning as I walked up Sumter Highway, am I quitting drinking? I had always been thinking, am I alcoholic? I might not really be alcoholic. I'm God almighty, I'm going to die. I'm going to get to this gate. St. Peter's going to say, why'd you quit drinking for? You weren't alcoholic. I mean, that was just God almighty. You know, it's just the worst nightmare any alcoholic could have. I'm going to quit drinking for nothing. Man. So, and I thought, Something else came to my head. Here's that higher power. Something else came in my head. A little voice came in my head. And that voice just asked me one question. What if they're right? And who he was talking about is two sets of people. I knew who he was talking about. He was talking about the teachers I'd had who said, you know, Fred, you're a nice boy, but you got a drinking problem. And there were my parents that told me, you know, Fred, we want to help you all we can, but you got a drinking problem. And a psychologist who said, son, I'd like to work with you, but you have got a drinking problem. And the police said, have you noticed that you have got a drinking problem? The judge said, you got a drinking problem. And my wives told me, Jesus, God, you have got a drinking problem. Everybody told me I had a drinking problem, and I blew them all off. They had a problem. I was fine. My drinking was bothering me. Get away from me. Because I don't see the issue. And there was a second set of people that I wondered if they were right. And that was the AAs who said that your real problem, Fred, is that you have a drinking problem. And if you will take care of that, all these other problems that are your the smoke screen of your life will go away. And I just, you know, I mean, I had serious things going on when I got here. I mean, unlike you guys. I mean, you know, because I'm sure there's not many people here that were in trouble with law when they came to AA. And there were not many people here that were in trouble with the IRS, I know. And certainly nobody was having marital difficulties when they came to AA. And nobody had any financial problems and all this and that. And the other. I mean, I had serious issues that y'all didn't understand that you had not dealt with before. And what y'all were asking me to do was to use a higher power to overcome these problems. Well, the only thing I was used to overcoming was advantages. I had been born with every damn advantage in the world. And I had overcome all of those to live in a park. What in the hell is that? That is the power of alcoholism. That is the power of alcoholism. So I was used to overcoming advantages, but I didn't know anything about overcoming difficulties with a higher power. But that's what y'all offered me, was a higher power. And by the time that I came back this time, I was ready. I was cooked. I was baked. I was ripe. Put a fork in his ass. He's ours. I was ready to surrender. Because really, this whole AA thing, folks, it's a surrender game. It's all surrender. It's all surrender. Forever new. Stay forever new. When you got here new, what did you do? You surrendered. Well, the same cornball, silly, stupid stuff that got your ass out the streets and put you in the situation that you're in today, stuff like that big book, will help you now as you live in sobriety. It's not about not drinking. It's about living sober. Two totally different things, folks. Not drinking is just, that's the ticket to the dance. But the dance is here tonight. Listen, imagine you are looking at a guy who was living in bushes just like that. I mean, nobody ever drove through that park and said, oh, there looks like a winner. I'll bet you in 10 years that sucker will have himself a microphone and be talking about the success story of his life. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, my God. There's the prowler again. You know, I mean, God almighty. Folks, you told me that I had to surrender. You know, when we look at that and what you and what, but I didn't know how much I had to surrender. See, I looked at the steps and I could see that you wanted me to admit that I was powerless over alcohol, and I had really come to the conclusion that even if I wasn't alcoholic, it was time to pretend like I was. Because, and just go ahead and say I was, even if I wasn't, and start acting like I was, even if I wasn't 100% sure. But I was 51% sure. And 51% will get you sober. But you need to be 51%. And I was able to reach the point where I could say that I'm powerless over alcohol. But folks, the second half of that step is tough. Because what you're really wanting me to do there is to tell you that my life is unmanageable by me. Now, I mean, folks, when you have got a resume that says City Park, Portland, Oregon, I mean, you don't think your life is out of control. I'm still in the driver's seat. You know, let me tell you the truth. When I was in that park, until I ran out of booze, I thought I was a pretty smart guy. I really kind of thought I might be a Zen master, might be living in a park in Portland, sort of communing with nature, having a good time, no roof over the head, no rent, no responsibility. This is okay. Take away the booze and I am in hell. Oh, man. My life clearly had been unmanageable forever. But see, what happens is we get sober and then we say, I have a drinking problem. Now I'm not drinking. Now my thinking is really, really good. Now I shall direct my life right into a tree. I mean, it's just the way of it, is it not? We got to surrender that part too. We got to, that part, because see, the one is about not drinking, and the second half of the first step is about living free. It's about living sober. It's about living large. It's about being here tonight. My God, we have got a yard full of hopeless drunks and addicts with us tonight. What a miracle. What a miracle is in this yard tonight. Under this tent, folks, is a miracle of truly gargantuan proportions. Forever new. Forever new. If we can stay forever new, I don't know if anybody else read the Daily Reflection today, but I happened to notice that I happened to read it. I happened to read it because doing some of that corny stuff that I did when I was first sober, it still works. And I read that Daily Reflection and it talked about complacency, that's the real killer. Because see, alcoholism was not going to kill me anymore. I got alcoholism, full-blown case of it. I'm standing in front of you right now. I am alcoholic down to my last cell. You can't be more alcoholic than I am, and I'm not dying from it. I'm not hurt from it. I'm not suffering from it. As a matter of fact, I'm grateful for it. But let me get complacent, and complacency will kill me. Let me lax up just a little bit too much. Because, you know, the guy taught me about three piles one time. I don't know if you've ever seen this or not, but he had the three piles. You put them on the table. You start out with just one pile, actually. You got one pile, and it's when you first get sober. You come to a place like this, get out of treatment. You come to a place like this, or you go to a halfway house or whatever, and you got nothing but time. You ain't got no money. You ain't got no friends. You ain't got no job. You ain't got no complications. You ain't got nothing but a whole lot of time for AA. So you got a big pile of AA. And you come in there, I'm doing everything just right. I've got my sponsor. I'm reading a book. I'm calling everybody. I'm talking to the alcoholics, and I'm doing this thing, and I'm praying on my knees, and I'm doing everything just right. And then I get a job. So I get a job, and I take a little bit out of the AA pile because that's all the time I got. So I take some out of the AA pile, and I put it over here. Now I got an AA pile, and I got a job pile. And that's everything's going good. I'm still doing everything, my AA thing, and I'm going to work. I'm coming back, and I'm being good, and I'm thinking about I'm going to get me a girlfriend. And I got me a girlfriend. So now I can't take any out of the job pile because the job pile, I got to have the job pile or I won't have the girlfriend. So I got to pull a little bit more out of the AA pile. And I put it over here, and I got the girlfriend pile, I got the work pile, and I got the AA pile. And that's just going great, you know, and it's just everything. And then we're going along just fine, and their girlfriend wants an apartment. And, well, I could do that. I mean, I could do anything. I mean, I quit drinking, didn't I? I did it all myself, on my own. Look at me, hot damn. Mr. Sobriety. So I just go ahead and yank some more on out of there, and then she'll be wanting to go places and do things and get a dog. And so we just keep pulling a little bit more out of that pile and out of that pile and out of that pile. And fairly soon, I got a great big old girlfriend pile and a great big old work pile, and I ain't got squat left over here in AA, and I get drunk, and I wake up in Morris Village. I can't find my shoes or my glasses. And you know what happens? I go to halfway house, I come here, or I go someplace, and I go into the table that morning, and I say, well, look at there, a great big AA pile. I got all the time in AA, and I do it all over again until I don't. I do it until I don't. Are you ready to not do that anymore? Forever new. I don't care if you're sober 30 years, stay forever new. This morning it said in that daily reflection, alcohol is a subtle foe. See, that's the thing, is that it's just so, they call it baffling. Baffling, in other words, I can't even understand how it works. It's so much bigger, so much tougher than I think. Folks, if it was easy to get sober, we'd be having to have this little thing in Williams-Brice Stadium, and I'd really be getting me a super microphone. I'd really be cutting loose now. I mean, I'd have me some cheerleaders and shit, and that'd just be great. We would pass the hat, too. We got to pay for all this. carry the message, but not the mess. Surrender is really what it's all about. I got to give up. I got to put down my thinking. Somebody got up here tonight and they introduced themselves and they said they were alcoholic and Rob or whatever is my problem. And that's right. See, because if drinking was actually my problem, then when I quit drinking, my problems would be gone. Now, grant you, I would have still inherited my own life. And I don't know about you, but by the time I quit drinking, my life was a mess. It was a terrible mess. And I wanted to not have to deal with it just right then. So I got drunk, and then I dealt with it when it was worse. And I didn't want to deal with it then, so I got drunk, and I dealt with it when it was worse. And it was just so ugly, I didn't want to deal with it then. So I got drunk, and I dealt with it when it was worse. And when it finally was just so ugly that it just was, I mean, you want to know how ugly it was? Want to know how ugly my life was by the time I quit drinking? Let me tell you, so how ugly was it? Okay, how rainy was it, Johnny? I want to tell you, because, you know, this is not a program about, this is not a program to give you a problem-free life. When I was 4 years sober, I just started, I have a little business on the internet, I sell books, and I had just started this, was one of those who never could get two nickels together after I got sober. I was dirt poor for years, and I just started my little company, and it looked like it might do something, and I had just, you know, and I had gotten Betsy to be my girlfriend. I finally found one that didn't need to be taken hostage, would just be my girlfriend and now my wife. She had been my girlfriend for a couple of years, and things were beginning to look up. And I remember it was my fourth year, Chip. I picked up my fourth year. Lee was there. A lot of people were in the room. Betsy was there. A lot of people were in the room that night that were important to me, who had been important. I don't know if you were there or not, Vince, but a lot of people were that had been important to me in my sobriety. And I came out of that room, I picked up my four-year chip, and it was just electrifying. I was just so excited. I was finally had my life on track. Everything was going to work. And I went home that night, and I thought, my God, this is just fabulous. This thing really works. It is just, I finally got the world by the tail. Everything's going to be all right after all. I just can't believe it. And Sled came and arrested me the next morning. There was a ninth step amend that I had taken care of, I thought. I had done my best. My best was not good enough. I inherited my life. I didn't inherit my brother's life. I didn't inherit some guy that wasn't a drunk's life. I inherited my life. Let me tell you where I learned about surrender beyond AA. Because see, for most people, being an alcoholic or a drug addict, the good news is that's enough. You can learn to surrender just from that. But God knew, oh, this guy will just get drunk on me again. I mean, everything is going good for him, and he's just going to get drunk on me again. I need to get his ass arrested. So that's what he did. And you can ask me, was I supposed to get arrested? Well, of course I was. How do I know? Because I got arrested. They didn't say that there are no mistakes in life other than getting arrested. They were talking about there are no mistakes in this life. So I got arrested. And where I learned surrender was I got to go turn myself in 23 weekends in a row at Richland County, the Alvin S. Glenn Detention Center. Thank you. Betsy knows it better than I do. And but I want to tell you something. The good news is that the bad news is, by the way, I didn't get to drink then either. And I wasn't alone. You know, even in that jail cell that day, I swear to God in heaven, I know you can imagine how I was just so brokenhearted. But I was sitting in that jail cell, and I thought, you know, this ain't as bad as the park. Swear to God. Can always be worse. Could have been worse. So this is not as bad as the park. So I got out, and guess what? People came and got me out of jail this time. I didn't have to. I mean, it was unbelievable. Betsy came and bailed me out. My sponsor came to the hearing and said, I've been with Fred for years. He's a wonderful guy. I don't know what they're talking about, but, you know, I can tell you he's changed his life and he's a great guy. And nobody had ever said in front of people that could hear me, you know, Fred is a good guy. You know, I'd always heard, Your Honor, that's him. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's him right there in the white shirt. I was him. Mm-hmm. So if you can take this thing with you, even to jail, you can take it to the hospital, and I just think you can probably take it to the grave. Because let me tell you something, it wasn't long at all. And I was going to Alvin S. Glenn Detention Center, and they would, and I would get there on a Saturday. They let me come on Saturdays instead of Fridays for my weekend time so I could get my job done, my work done. And I would show up on Saturday morning just before noon. I'd eat everything in the house, and then I'd go over there. And I'd show up at the gate, and I'd show up at the gate with a smile, which is throw them out. You know, it's like, what's he got in his pants? You know what I mean? Why is he coming here smiling? People do not smile here, sir. And I would come there and I would smile, and it wasn't long before I got to know the guard at the gate. The guards at the gate, they had more than one. And I used to talk about my garden, my big elephant ears. They were 8. And they'd say, oh, how are your elephant ears, Mr. Davis? I'd say, they're beautiful. They're 8 feet tall, they're big around as your arm. It's just unbelievable. Tell you, we're just having wonderful weather, aren't we? Yes, sir. You know where you're going, don't you? Yes, sir, I do. Okay. And I would just trot my ass right on across the yard. And for those of you who have ever been over there, and I would go into the garage where the police pull in and everything, and I would let myself in that back door. As soon as I got that back door open, they would have already seen me on camera coming across the yard. As soon as I got the back door open, you could see the woman who does the booking, the mug shots and everything, and she'd be waving, hey, Mr. Davis! Mr. Davis, how you doing? Mr. Davis is here. I'm telling you, this is God's own truth. But it would be a while before I could get to her, because the guy who searched me, we would have to sit down. He had a little eBay business. And we would sit down. I swear to you, Swear to you. Listen, you ain't worth dying for to get a laugh. And I just, you know, and I got, I'll die if I get up here and lie. So I'm just telling you the truth. So I went in down and I would sit down and I would tell him about how to work his eBay business so he could bump up his business and get sell his little boats on eBay. And he would always, I mean, I'd get there and he'd say, do you want a sandwich or something, Mr. Davis? I mean, would you like, because that was my nickname, was Mr. Davis. Would you like something to drink, Mr. Davis? I mean, they've already come by with the cart, but I can go get you something if you'd like. I would like a drink. So then they would take me, and then they would put me with the sweet lady who did the booking and everything, and she and I would chat. And then because they were letting me go out and pick up trash and stuff on the weekends, I had to go and see the nurse. So they would take me in and the nurse, and it turned out that the nurse was a lesbian, and she just felt like she really needed to talk about that with me. She needed to come out to me and tell me the difficulties that she was having as a young professional lesbian who also had an eBay business. And how do you get to where you can make your living at it, Mr. Davis? It's got to be sitting in this jail. It would be hours before I got processed and got up to the whatever you call it, the ward, the whatever. It would take forever. When I left there, on the last day that I left there, the first guy that I ever saw there, the first guy that ever searched me in that jail, is the guy that let me out. And he put out my hand and he said, it's been a pleasure to know you, sir. I wish you well. You can take this with you anywhere you go. Forever new. Thank you very much.